Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Wherever and whenever you're listening, it's probably beer o'clock, and we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you right here on the podcast starting right now.
Welcome back into Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris, and we are out and about.
Out in a boot, as they say.
Out in a boot. Out in a boot. As I like to say. Celebrating a very special episode of our podcast today. Episode number 53.
Yeah. Shabra.
If you have been listening, you understand that means it is the first episode of year two of the podcast. We have completed one full year of this silly thing.
I can't believe it.
I know. It feels like we've done 20 episodes and we've done 52, and I don't understand where the time went, but that means it's been a lot of fun.
I know.
Right? Time flies when you're having fun.
It must be. It's one of those kind of crazy things. It's like we started this little thing as a little just trying to have some fun and see where it took us, and now we are fully invested in this bad boy. I mean, this is now a part of our life, Mike.
It is a part of our life, and things are moving in a positive direction, which is good.
I would agree. I would agree. Things are going great.
And so, yeah, if it's your first time listening, hi. Welcome aboard.
Hello. It's a great time to have you.
Great time to join. Also a good time to binge all 52 episodes if you have time.
So not to sound too, like, narcissist or anything, but it would be so dope to stumble on this and listen to this episode and be like, hey, I kind of dug that. Whoa, there's 52? All right, I'm in.
Don't worry that they're like 45 minutes each. Just start listening.
Just start listening.
You can do it over the course of maybe 3 days if you're feeling a little bit long about it.
There's some great highlights of over the last year if you want to reminisce for a hot second.
Sure.
The West Coast IPA episode number two.
Episode number two.
Brought us out to Grains of Wrath and talked with Mike Hunsaker, who's going to sit down with us in a little bit.
That's where we are, by the way. I didn't say that.
Oh, you didn't say that.
I just said we're out in the boot.
We're out in the boot.
We are at Grains of Wrath because we figured since episode two was our first on-location episode, that our first episode of year two should be back where we started.
Yes.
We've been pubbing Grains of Wrath like crazy on the podcast, talking about how great their beer is. We had Dystopia as beer of the week. We had EGA as beer of the week.
Yep.
We had, I want to say, two or three others at least on the podcast, maybe not as beer of the week necessarily.
We both came out to the one-year anniversary for Grains of Wrath. We weren't together, but
completely accidentally on that day. Well, you were intentionally on that day. I brought my wife out here like, hey, let's go to Grains of Wrath. It was the one-year anniversary. I had no idea. So I'm excited today to try food that wasn't on the menu then because it was a limited menu for that day. But we're back at Grains of Wrath, and we're going to do a regular takeover episode, but sit back down with Mike Hunsaker again as part of today's episode just to kind of have a nice little bookend to year number one and come back to one of our favorite places too.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I reached out to Mike to try to set this up, and he was super thrilled, really, really genuine and appreciative that this stupid little podcast that we do chose his place as our one-year anniversary. It was kind of a no-brainer for us, and we'll get into that a little bit with Mike, but that's kind of what we thought, right? You and I were talking to each other, and we were like, what should we do? Let's go to Grains.
We wanted to go to somewhere. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make it special, and for us, it was a no-brainer. What better place than to come here to make it special and make it a one-year anniversary edition of Beers on Us. So you can find us all over the place, radio.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Omni, 1080thefan.com. Social media, we have a Beers on Us Instagram now, at Beers on Us, which we should take a picture of before we forget.
Cool. And, I'll do that right now.
So follow us there. You can also follow us on our individual social media pages. Patrick is at PDiddy085 on Instagram. I'm at MikeLynch27 on Twitter. And I got a Zoglehaus sent to me this time because we talked about them on last week's episode a little bit.
Nice.
And keep sending pictures of what you're drinking and stuff that you're interested in. And
had a bunch of people drinking Backwoods this week. I had multiple people reach out to me either to me personally or on the Beers on Us Instagram page. They were drinking Backwoods.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I almost went to Backwoods on Friday, actually. Wound up going to Von Ebert because the line was shorter, but there was a group of nine of us. So it was like, we got to go to somewhere big.
Von Ebert's usually a good spot for big groups.
It was. We walked in and she was like, just had a table open up. I was like,
thank you.
Perfect.
Sign me
up. Thank you. But yeah, so that's where you can find us on social media. Send us beers you're drinking or what you're interested in the podcast or even segment ideas or episode ideas that you have. Look, we're starting year two. We've done 52 of these bad boys, and we've still got ideas in the bank here, but you know, you can help us out if you feel like it.
Yeah, why not? Get off your lazy butt and do something for a change. tired. Yeah. My back hurts. The heavy lifting.
Wherever you are listening to us, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us greatly. And let us know what you think about the podcast and what you'd like us to do in the future. So, yeah, quickly, we're recording this Sunday, 2 days after we recorded Thursday's episode. There's not really a ton of a new weekend beer.
Right.
I did go to Von Ebert on Friday. I had a friend just move here from Connecticut, and he was out with some work friends over in the Pearl area, so I met up with them Friday night. We went to Von Ebert for dinner. Had the Helles Lager.
Yummy, yummy.
Delicious. By the way, I've never ordered more Helles Lager in the last, like, month than I have in my entire life.
It's amazing.
Well, it's because of you. And
because it's amazing.
There's a Helles Lager in front of us now, too, which I'm very excited about. And then today we met up before we came out here because we had some time to kill, and went to Trapdoor for the first time and went to Doomsday.
Doomsday, yep. I gave Vancouver. Mike the little the Vancouver treatment.
It was a quick one. We only had a couple hours, but had an ESB at Trapdoor, which is something I would never order, and I had it, and it was really good, actually.
A really funny story about that is I got there right before Mike did, and I ordered a beer. I looked at the beer list. And I was like, Trapdoor is known for their hazies. And if you listen to the podcast, you know Mike and I aren't the biggest hazy guys.
And they have like 8 hazies on the menu.
Yeah. So that's their big thing. And Vancouver seems to be really responding well to it. And I flipped through the menu and I found one. I was like, ooh, I'm going to have that. And then Mike comes in and orders a beer. We hadn't talked to each other. He orders a beer. And then we're standing there and I'm like, what'd you get? And you're like, I got the ESB. And I was like, me too. Of course we both got the ESB. It was delicious. I enjoyed it.
It was quite good. And then Doomsday, I got a chocolate stout. And I was trying to stick to a little lower ABV stuff. It was not a super strong one. It was like 5-something percent. Very, very good, actually. I really, really enjoyed it. It was a nice, easy-drinking, solid stout. And you got a Kolsch there, right?
I got I got some kind of lager. They didn't really describe the style of lager. It was just
legendary
lager. So I figured it was just probably just an American lager. Yeah, it was fine.
I enjoyed the ESB a little bit more, if I'm being honest.
I enjoyed the ESB, too, but I think we were both in the same mood of trying to – we wanted something with a little malt.
Yeah.
We were like, I want that.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And that's why I got a stout in the second place,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
All right, so let's dive in. We've got 3 different taster trays right in front of us here, and we did everything except for the EGA and the Dystopia IPA, because, as I said, we've had those on the podcast before. So we have every other beer here in front of us.
And Friday night, I had nothing to do. I got off work a little early. I sat at home, goofed around at the house, and then I walked down to Cerveza for a couple beers. And what'd they have on draft? Dystopia.
Of course.
So I drank Dystopia.
Did you have Dystopia? Yes.
I drank like 3 of them.
Okay. So we've got them all in front of us. So you've got the beer menu, but we've got Dive Bar Lager. We've got the Helles Lager. We've got the Salt Shaker, which is a
Goza.
Mexican lager.
Oh, Mexican lager.
We got the Vienna lager, which is a classic here. We've got, what does that one say? Luger Pilsner. We've got the Pandemic, which is a hazy. We've got the Lamb. You Can't Sell Us the Lamb, which is a pale ale. We've got the Papermaker, which is their classic pale, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're pale ale. Yep, they're like Northwest pale ale.
We've got the Goza. We've got the Agave Golden, which is a golden ale. We've got the Gretel's, which is a Gretel's Delight, which is a coffee cake stout, which I'm very excited about. And we've got a really strong one here, Mott's Fantasy, which is a Belgian-style quad in Pinot barrels. It's 12%.
Yeah, for all you homebrewers out there, that's your beer right there.
And
that's
we've also
quad, that big ABV quad.
We've also got the Gin Barrel Aged 509 Pale, all in front of us right now. How would you like to we also have food coming. How would you like to tackle this?
I have no idea.
The only place we've done this many is Laurelwood.
Yeah.
Where they brought everything out, and I'm not 100% sure I know how we did that and made it work.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So let's just start.
Maybe we can go back and listen to the Laurelwood episode.
Yes.
Hello.
But after you listen to this one, because you're in the middle of it already.
In the middle of this, yeah. Don't turn it off.
Why would you end it? Come on. You're already committed. To us, and to the beer, and to the food, and to Grains of Wrath, and to Mike, because it's great. So we got the Dive Bar Lager and the Helles Lager we've already taken sips of.
Yep.
Your facial reaction to the Helles Lager was enough to tell me how you feel about it.
I mean, it's just that, you know, I'm a man of simple tastes, okay? I don't need a whole lot. I'm an easily excitable person. I don't know. Some might call that, you know, unintelligent. Maybe I'm just kind of stupid, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm easily excited, and I'm easily pleased, even though there are times where I seem like, you know, I can be a curmudgeon and angry and picky and all that, you know, my top 10 list. You know, there's only 10 good breweries. You know, I can be that guy, too, but lots of times when I'm oot and a boot, it doesn't take much. Good people, something decent in front of me, and I'm a happy guy.
Well, finish the rest of this tray because you've had the first two, so I just took sips of these two. So have the salt shaker.
Okay.
And have the Vienna, and I'll start because I've now had a sip of all four of these. This Helles Lager is really good, man. Mm-hmm. And we walked in, and Mike told us that this was fresh and new to the tap list. So very, very excited to try that. And it is so, I don't know. I don't want to say perfect. Nothing's perfect. But it's a really good Helles Lager. It's one of the better ones I've had in my recent month of having Helles Lagers a lot.
Well, I think what's great, and I've had three of these four first beers, and I've already had the Vienna Lager, but I'm excited to taste it again.
Yeah,
I think one of the most important things to know, and one of the most, I think probably if I said this to Mike, he would probably agree with us. Grains of Wrath beer is always and has always been super clean. You're not really going to run into off flavors. You're not really going to run into deficiencies. And whether it's a dark beer, a malt-forward beer, a hazy IPA, or a lager, I mean, they finish clean, if that makes sense. Different than being, like, clear, see-through is not what I mean. I mean clean as in it's, like, it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the end lingers appropriately and finishes the way it's needed to. I think if you're listening to this and you live in Southwest Washington, you have a gem out here. You have soon to be known throughout the state of Washington as one of the best breweries here.
And I understand for those of you who live here because I just made the drive from Vancouver because, like I said, we were right there.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly far in terms of – it's not far, but it feels far when you're driving it. So I understand mm-hmm. if people maybe don't want to commit to coming this way if you live in Vancouver and you have, you know, multiple places that are close to you. Make the commitment, man. It's like a 15-minute drive at most, and it is – I mean, everything here is great.
Yes.
And the food just got placed down in front of us, and it looks amazing. And it's like it's
– I have too much food.
For you especially. Jesus.
Yeah, I have
you
too
eat
much
nothing,
food.
And you got – I ordered less than you.
I know.
I ordered two things.
I know. I'm going to eat this for like 3 days. Don't worry about it.
Okay, that's good. But I just – if you have not been out here in hell, even if you live in Portland, even if you live in Beaverton, even if you live in Wilsonville, I don't effing care. Come to Grains of Wrath, okay? Make the trip. First of all, if you're driving down 14 on a clear day, you get the best view of the damn mountain you're going to get anywhere in this area.
Mount Hood looked gorgeous.
And second of all, you're going to be so happy that you came here. So just come here, okay?
Yeah.
Trust us.
Let me put it this way.
We think we know what we're talking about.
You know, I've been very fortunate in my time in this town, and especially in my time at Breakside, to meet a lot of people in the beer industry. You know, you make friends, you say hi. What are you drinking? What'd you do this week? How's the wife? Blah, blah, blah.
How was your week in beer?
And I can't tell you how many times I hear somebody say, oh, yeah, we were out of Grains the other day. Really? You live in St. John's. Yeah, well, I mean, it's Grains, though. We felt like going to Grains, and so we drove out there.
Exactly.
It's also a great spot if you're doing any, like, hiking in the gorge. Like, that's your jam right there. Just...
Like come down here on the way home?
Come back on 14 or cross at the Bridge of the Gods and swoop in on this spot.
All right,
this place was desperately needed for Camus.
I would agree. I've been here before this place opened, and there were two breweries that were very small, and I tried them both. They were fine, right? I don't actually remember the names of them, to be honest with you, so apologies. But I tried them. They were good, solid. I mean, this place is like 100 steps ahead, right? This place I would put, like, against the best breweries in the city of Portland, right, you know, right across the river next door. I mean, it's just that good. And I know we're here, and, you're biased, you're there. Trust us. We wouldn't have come back here for the year anniversary episode if we didn't feel this way, honestly, about this place. Four beers that we tried. What are your thoughts? Outside of, you know, they're clean, well-made, good finish. The Helles Lager is great. The Salt Shaker, the Mexican Lager, is really interesting. There's, like, a flavor of... It's like, it's more limey than I would have, than you get from most Mexican lagers, but it's not overpowering. It's just right there.
Well, what interests me about the Mexican lager, a beer called Salt Shaker, A, if I cut my palate aside, I think it's a fantastic name for a Mexican lager. You know, sounds great, works well. But me, as somebody who's fairly sensitive to salt, I see that and I'm like, ooh, no thank you. And if I read the description, light and crisp Mexican lager with hints of lime and salt added, brewed in collaboration with our friends at Bailey's Tap Room. And so there is salt added to it, so I'm a little scared. I tasted it, and I think the salt is adding such a nice complexity to the beer, yet keeping it straightforward. I think what's really cool about the salt shaker is the balance. I don't find the lime overpowering.
No, it's just kind of hidden there, but it gives you that flavor.
And for me, the salt is like adding to the body. And I think when you think Mexican lager and you start drinking things like Mexican lagers, you assume there's no body. You know, you assume there's no body, and there shouldn't be that much of a body. It should be pretty chill. But the salt added in it is giving you a little extra.
Yeah.
And I think that really complements it well.
It adds a depth of flavor, and the lime adds a depth of flavor, and it's not overpowering, which is why I like that a lot. The other three on this tray are, I don't want to say simple, but if you come in and get a dive bar lager, you're getting the closest thing to like a Bud Light that is craft beer, but 100 times better. The Helles Lager, the Vienna Lager, the same thing. You know, if you're ordering that, you know what you're expecting. And what you get here is just a solid, well-made Helles, Vienna, and dive bar lager with no flaws. Just kind of clean, crisp, refreshing, easy, light drinking beers for summertime or river floating or sitting in front of the TV and having a beer at night, you know?
And these days, you got to have those beers.
You have to. Well, we talked about it all year. This was going to be the year of the lager and the clean beer.
I'm interested in what Mike's going to say about that because I do want to ask him that because his reputation and his success – and everything we know about him is how fantastic of a hoppy beer guy he is.
And these are the opposite.
And you look at this tap list now, and it is so all over the place in a positive way. I mean, he's got, let's see, we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got 4 lagers on. You told me a year ago Mike Hunsker has 4 different lagers on. I'm like, oh, which one's not selling? You know? But it's like, no, we're in this to do it. And it's great. I'm a happy camper. I'm going to try this lager.
Okay, go for it. Our second tray is that's a Pilsner. Luger Pilsner, it says. The Luger Pilsner, it's the hazy IPA of the pandemic. It's the You Can't Silence the Lamb, which is a pale.
Ooh, that Pilsner is nice.
And then we got the Papermaker Pale, which is probably their is that their longest running beer, the Papermaker Pale?
I think so, yeah.
It's all in this tray. So again, not super hoppy, right? The hazy obviously is not going to be hoppy. You've got the Pilsner. You've got a pale and a pale. So that's the nice thing, too, is you're right. He's known for the hoppy beers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet right now, what we're do we have in front of us?
Yeah, we're looking at trays that are...
Now, granted, we skipped the hoppiest beers because we've had them 100 times. But we're looking at trays of variety.
Right.
And when you go to breweries, or I should say when I go to breweries, what I look for is being able to get a taster tray like this and go all over the board and have great things no matter what. Right?
Right.
And it's not just like going to a place that only does hazies or only does IPAs or whatever. You're going to a place that does everything,
mm-hmm.
and everything hopefully well. That's what we have.
Well, it's an old conversation I had I don't want to say names because I don't know if this person necessarily wants to attach their name to it. But I had a conversation with a great brewer in the Portland scene, and I said. We're just kind of talking about being versatile and being diverse, and this person said to me, you know, you can be great at IPAs, you can showcase just German lagers, you can be pastry stouts and hazy IPAs or barrel aged sours. Like, you have that niche, that's totally fine, go for it. But if you can't dabble in every little style there is, then you're just niche. You're just kind of kitschy.
Right.
And to be able to be viewed as a quality brewery, you have to be able to dabble in other stuff. Now, that's nothing to take away from, like, you know, Alex at Upright or, you know, the long-standing tradition that is Cascade Barrel House. Like, that's fine. That's what you do. That's okay. But to be a brewery, to really gain the traction and the notice you need, you got to dabble in everything. And I think that's super important. You can still be like, you know, I work at Breakside Brewery. We are known for our hoppy beers. but that doesn't mean we're putting less effort into our lagers, our dark beers, stuff like that. Mike's rolling his eyes at me. but I think that's really important. And I think what we're seeing with all these beers in front of us, sure, we didn't get an EGA or a Dystopia because we've had them, but I'm looking at a lot of beers on this that are 5 years ago, someone says, Mike Hunsaker gave me, 30 beers to try, and there's only two with hops in them. people aren't going to believe that.
No.
So I think that's great. That's what's standing out to me right now.
So I just went through the second board.
I'm going hazy.
Uh-oh. I know. Look out. I did it too. So we had the Pilsner, the hazy, and the two pails. And so, again, as you all know, we dislike hazies quite a bit. This is one of the better hazies that we've had. It's got way less of the juicy, pulpy stuff that happens in a lot of the hazies. And I understand that it's a hazy. It's not the flavor I like the most, but I get the IPA in it still, which I think is lost in a lot of the hazy IPAs at this point, where it's just like, hey, I'm having orange juice.
Yeah.
But it's beer and it has alcohol in it.
I get hop character and I think one of the biggest problems, and we're going to have to eventually tackle this. We've been saying it for a year. But we're eventually going to have to tackle these hazy IPAs. I think these days, if you're going to make a hazy IPA and someone's going to give you credit for it or say, this is a decent beer, you can't have the off flavors. I think way too many people, I get so much diacetyl in hazy IPAs. And I think some breweries rely on them so much that they get rushed, and so things aren't properly fermenting, and then all of a sudden you've got these huge D-bombs, but nobody notices because of all the juice and sweetness. And this I get hop flavor. It's not my favorite beer. I'm probably not going to order that.
Well, I just took a second sip.
But for a hazy, I'm okay.
The first flavor I get is hop and a little bitterness.
And that's huge. That's what's important.
And now I wonder, how does this beer do with hazy fans? Because that's not what hazy fans want.
Right, it's probably too bitter.
But for us who like bitter IPAs and are enjoying the fact that it's a different style, it still gives me that bitter, and then I get a little bit of that juicy in the middle, and then I kind of get bitter at the end again. So it's well-balanced. It works. Yeah, you just made that face. I like the You Can't Silence the Lamb a lot.
Yeah, I just tasted this You Can't Silence the Lamb Pale Ale, brewed in memory of Brian Lamb and in support of Northwest Sarcoma Foundation. Flavors and aromas of grapefruit, peach, and juicy fruit gum. I get the peach a lot.
That's really good.
$1 per pint sold in July goes to that foundation. That, whew.
I know.
Bro, we're gonna have to pick like a beer of the week, and it's going to be tough.
I know. And we still have four more we haven't tried yet either.
I know.
So the last four is we got the Goza, which, as you heard a couple episodes ago, the two of us are a little risky with the Gozas.
Well, we talked about it with the salt shaker. Like, I'm not a salt kid. It's tough for me. But things done well, I'm okay with.
So we've got that. Haven't tried it yet. We've got the Agave Golden. Haven't tried that yet. We've got the Gretel's Delight, which I'm very excited about. The Coffee Cake Stout, which is right up my alley.
Oh, that paper maker's still tasting good, too.
Classic. And then we've got the Mott's Fantasy. Oh, it's Fantasy. Watch, there an extra I there.
It means fancy words.
Okay.
Yeah. It literally means fancy words in
okay.
French.
Misspelled intentionally? Gotcha. Okay. That's why I got confused. That's the Belgian-style quad. And then we've also got the Gin Barrel Aged 509 sitting over here by itself. Where do you want to start? You want to do the Goza? Because...
Oh, boy.
I know. But, like you said, right?
Oh, boy. Light, easy-drinking summer sour ale backed by a touch of coriander and salinity from Jacobson Pinot Noir Sea Salt. So we were talking with Mike before we started, and he said he got some sea salt that's like... infused with Pinot Noir, some crazy stuff like that. That is an aspect that I've never thought of. Because I've had tons of Gozas, especially with Jacobson Sea Salt. Everybody uses Jacobson Sea. They're like, they own the market, basically. But I haven't seen like a variety of that sea salt doing something else. So,
well, try this.
I'm going to give it a shot.
The first sip I just had, this is the least salty Goza I've ever had in terms of like punching you in the face with salt flavor. Because I think if it is the Pinot Noir or salt, it tempers it a lot. It makes it to me taste more like, I'm probably going to say this wrong. I don't know exactly what style I should say for this, but it doesn't taste like a Goza. To me, at least. It tastes like a style that I enjoy more, I guess is a better way to put it.
I get some nice tartness from it. The biggest thing for me, see, I don't mind the flavor of salt in a goza. It's the finish. And I think the finish is meant to be this way, but it's something I don't dig. It's dirty socks. Every time I drink a goza, I'm like, ooh, this is nice, and now my mouth tastes like dirty socks. This does not taste like dirty socks. I don't know if that means it's too par, if that it's too style, but I will drink something that doesn't taste like dirty socks to me. Some people love that stuff, though.
The agave Golden is the strongest beer we've had so far in terms of instantly hitting you with the flavor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I will say that's my least favorite that I've tried so far.
Okay.
And I was actually expecting to like that a little bit, but I also don't like tequila. So if agave is used in it, maybe that's a flavor that I don't like very much.
You are crazy, my man.
I just don't
absolutely
enjoy tequila.
Insane.
But yeah, so that's
tequila is life.
Well, then you're probably gonna love that beer.
Yes.
But for me, that is not exactly my go-to right there. But we're getting into the dark range, which is very, very exciting. See, very strong right off the bat.
Ooh, I dig it. It has like a I don't know if it's because it just came off the goza, but. It's like a touch of tartness. Just a touch. I wouldn't. I mean, it's like deep diving into it. I don't know if I've ever had a beer with agave nectar.
I don't think I have either.
But I like tequila. In fact, I would argue I love tequila.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's a little thing. So we're gonna flash back into the youth of Patrick Harris, as wild a time as that was.
It was wild, guys, so get ready.
My father, you know, who is no longer with us, was such a sweet, gentle giant. I am a short man. My father was a large man, and that's just kind of how things go.
Well, your mom's very short, so you got your mom's genes for life.
Yep, and her parents are short, too.
Apologies.
It's okay. I'm okay being short. I'm over it. My father was never a big drinker, okay? He would have some beers, hang out, but some wine. He was never a big drinker. But his favorite things in the entire world were Negro Modelo and tequila. And so it's like when the old man was like, I feel like drinking some tequila.
So you're saying
everyone had tequila.
He liked Mexican restaurants a lot.
Yeah, I guess so. So it was one of those things like when dad wanted to open a bottle of tequila and dad wanted to sip on some tequila, you didn't say no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cause the so old man when did you first have tequila then?
21, obviously.
Oh, wink, wink, duh.
Yeah, legally. Yeah. I don't know. I was probably drinking crappy tequila. I don't think I got into tequila till I was like 25.
Well, but you're saying your dad was like, I'm assuming he let you try it when you were younger, right? If
no.
he was that into it?
No.
Really?
No.
Staunchly against
my old man bought me beer once before I was 21, and it was on a rafting trip in Idaho 6 days before my 21st birthday.
He's like, you're close enough.
It's the only time my dad ever bought me beer, and he handed me that beer and gave me this look like, don't ever ask for anything like this ever again. He's a good dude.
It's just as simple as one beer.
He's a good guy. So that's the story of Marty Harris. If you're ever curious, Marty's a cool dude.
So, yeah, so that's the story of the agave nectar golden ale right there, too. All tied in together.
I swear Mike brewed this beer thinking of my dad.
Exactly.
That's always. He's never met him. But
well, no.
He's totally like, oh, I feel this guy somewhere.
Well, that's the cool thing, too, is we've talked about this kind of on maybe not exactly as specifically as this, but it's sometimes drinking beer or anything or eating, it'll remind you of experiences, and that makes it even better. So that beer reminds you of your dad.
Beer reminds me of my dad.
That's awesome.
I miss my dad. It was his birthday the other day.
There you go. Happy whatever birthday it would have been, Papa Harris.
62.
There you go. Happy 62nd birthday, Papa Harris.
Holla.
Hopefully you're listening from wherever you are at the moment.
That Gretel's Delight is quite nice.
It is.
It's quite nice.
I know. I had a sip. It is quite nice.
It doesn't taste 7.3.
No.
I feel it's pretty dry.
The next beer does taste like 12%, though.
I'm like scared critiquing beers as Hunsaker's sitting next to us, not on a mic, that he's just like, oh, these guys again.
We're trying our best, Mike.
One of the things I like about Gretel's Delight is it's dry. It's kind of dry to me. It's got all these great flavors, and you know, you see coffee cake stout, you're kind of like, all right, there's going to be a touch
you think
of sweetness,
it'd be sweet, yeah.
but balanced, you know. And it comes off kind of dry to me, and I kind of dig that.
Well, I think it's almost like you think about the crust. Oh, yeah, that you'll taste the alcohol on that one.
It smells like booze.
I think you think about like a crust of a cake or like the back end of a cake. you're going to get some dryness, right? You're going to get the sweet icing on the top, and then you're going to get the dryness of the cake, and that's what you get. You get the really sweet cinnamon cake right off the top, and then you get dry because you got the crust.
Right.
That's what it tastes like to me. It tastes like a slice of cinnamon cake, basically.
Mott's Fantasy, the Pinot Noir barrel comes through quite nice. That's a really cool beer.
This one's really good, too. I tried this one. Try the Gin Barrel 509.
Yeah.
That one is...
I'm still trying to devour this Mott's Fantasy.
Devour it?
Devour? I mean, like, I don't know.
I was like, what's happening?
Infuse? I don't know.
Are you trying to chug this the rest
of
the sample?
No. I'm trying to develop some thoughts about this beer.
Well, you probably don't have quads too often, huh?
No, I'm not a home brewer. That's the joke. It's like we got this guy that works for us. He's been a home brewer for a long time, used to work in the kitchen at Deakum, and now he's part of the brew staff. And you put a quad, a triple, like all these older European styles in front of him, and he just goes bananas for him. So I'm thinking – I taste this beer, and I'm thinking of you, Andy. I know you're not listening, but I'm thinking of you.
Well, here, I'm going to help you because I know you're getting this right off the bat, too. You get the Brettanomyces.
Without a doubt.
Right? First thing you taste. Maybe not the first thing you taste.
I like a little bit of Brett in my life.
The first strong flavor I got was the Brettanomyces in this beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get kind of like a – almost like a – what's the right way to put it? Like a fruit strand, like one of those like chewy fruit strands that you eat.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like I kind of get that little bit of a flavor in there a little bit.
Okay.
It says it has cranberries and dark fruit, so I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm right because I'm learning and trying my best.
God, you're so smart, Mike.
oak and a touch of funk, which I tend to relate to the Brettanomyces anyway,
mm-hmm.
touch of funk.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and oak, Pinot Noir for sure.
That's what I would say. I
struggle with getting the wood flavor in general in beers.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find it.
I think I've been, you know, over the last probably 2 or 3 years of my life, I've really been diving into kind of barrel-aged sours, especially with fruit, like kind of that lambic-inspired kind of stuff. That tends to be where I go. So I've had a lot of exposure to wood and stuff like that. I think...
That's what she said.
You're totally right that the Brett comes through really nicely up front. I love the barrel character of this beer. I think the oak, the Pinot Noir comes through very, very nicely, and everything else is just kind of adding to it.
I think now that I've had the second sip, the very end of the palate is getting a lot of that oak wood on it as I'm, like, sitting here letting it rest.
Let's put it this way,
Mike.
I'm
getting it at the back of my tongue a little bit.
I would drink a 12-ounce pour of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I would. I would. I know. And people say to me, like my buddy Andy, who works for us, that I always laugh at. We it's a running joke. He's like, okay, man, we'll enjoy that IPA that tastes like everybody else's IPA. And I'm like, all right, kid, you home brewer, enjoy that quad just so you can get drunk. This is quite nice. I think for my palate these days, you know, because I feel pretty dialed in on hobby beers. I feel pretty dialed in on certain kinds of lagers like yellow beer. I really, really love the concept of wood with barrels and stuff.
Yep.
I work next to a guy every day that kind of runs our barrel program, and I mean, he's crazy. He's, you know, crazy like a S-house rat, you know. he's a great dude, but he talks to me about barrels and wood and oak in a way that, like, somebody talks to you about, like, programming a computer, and you're kind of like, but it's just wood. And so I'm, like, really fascinated by it.
And you
it
say
right
that
now.
To him, and he goes, it's not just wood.
It's not just wood.
You understand.
Yeah. So right now, currently in, like, my personal, like, not even work life or podcast life, I mean, like, in my personal life, I'm kind of obsessed with wood character right now.
All right, well.
I've probably gotten drunk around too many campfires.
Guess
before.
What? You have another barrel-aged beer right in front of you that you got to taste. It's the last one in front of us. I am someone who does not like gin. It is It is probably my least favorite hard alcohol. That beer makes me want to try gin more. I like that one a lot.
Well, I think the biggest
it's
thing,
a gin barrel aged pale, by the way.
Like, to go on a tangent real quick about gin, I think gin gets a really bad reputation with some people because everybody just thinks it's juniper and pine needles and it's like, I don't want to drink liquor that tastes like Christmas trees. Well, you're drinking bad gin. That's the problem. Like, if you want to enjoy gin, like, I have a bottle of Hendrick's in my house at all times.
Okay.
And I don't even really drink a lot of liquor at my house, but I have it because that's
good gin.
Because
it makes you feel cool?
No, it's good gin in the sense that it's not just juniper. It's coriander. It's orange peel. It's zest. It's all these different kind of spices and herbs that go into it to make it more complete. It's kind of the same thing like beer, you know? You can have a Budweiser, a Coors Banquet, a Rainier, and be like, yeah, that's great. I dig it. But there's no complexity to it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And drinking, I guess nobody in the spirit world is probably listening to this, but drinking Beefeater gin, I'm just like, okay, it's boring. It's like, here's your flavor, that's it, and I'm done.
Well, do you?
And
do
then you get into like a Hendrick's, for example, and you're like, whoa. They even show you on the pamphlet, like, what spices they use and what herbs and orange peel and stuff like that they use. And you're like, oh, I can taste that. I can taste that instead of just Merry Christmas.
Can I gain some respect back by saying that my favorite is, like, whiskey and bourbon?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me it has depth of flavor.
Yeah.
The gin flavors never really resonated with me in the same way.
Yeah.
But maybe I've only ever had bad gin.
I don't drink vodka because I tell people it's, like, filtered ethanol. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, actually, it kind of does.
Yeah, vodka's awful.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't like vodka.
It's just filtered ethanol. That's right. All it is.
Okay, so there's all the beers. We're going to have a really hard time picking beer.
Although
I think I have a lean right now. But that'll be coming up in a couple of segments.
I do got to ask you a question.
Yes.
Before we wrap up this segment. How's your food?
Delicious.
Yeah?
I was going to say, I want to stop talking so I can eat the food.
Right.
But I had a couple of bites of these Luger fries, which... I had to get. I saw that on the menu. I was like, I can't get a large because I'm going to be a fat ass.
Yeah, Mike, but you are fat kid loves cake all over it, dude.
It's so good.
I love you.
But this burger, I've only had one bite so far because it exploded all over my hands. But it's the Banh Mi burger. And first bite was delicious. And you know me, burgers, mm-hmm. everything 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I've been here once before. It was for the 1-year anniversary. The menu was different. I want to get a burger, but I want to get something that's really different than I normally get, which is this.
I knew you'd get a burger.
When we come back, I'll tell you more how I feel about it because I've had one bite. But
I've got a pork bowl with rice.
You demolished the egg on top of it, let me tell you.
Well, no, I mixed it around. It Okay. And there's like snap peas in here, and there's pork, and there's kimchi and daikon carrots. And this is Patrick Harris food right here.
So we will tell you more about that when we come back because we haven't had a chance to really eat yet. And we'll also have Mike Hunsker with us when we come back. This is Beers on Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. All right, it's interview portion time here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. Mike Hunsker is down with us, although you heard him in the last segment talking from a distance over the microphone as we were talking to him as he was sitting down. Thank you so much for having us back out, Mike.
Oh,
so
thanks for coming, and congratulations, boys.
I don't know we're going to get through this.
No, it's pretty great.
We'll get through a year. We'll get through it like we get through everything else, okay?
All right.
With power,
make it till you make it.
Power and vigor and Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, whoa. That's how we get through it.
And a slight stumble.
Let's start with, so it's been basically one full year since we were last here.
I think we sat at the same table, too.
This exact same table.
Is this your table, Mike?
Yeah, it is my table.
It's your table.
It's right to my work.
Yeah.
Exact same table. We talked mostly about West Coast IPAs with you, a little bit about Grains of Wrath, but I want to spend more time focusing on grains for this podcast episode here.
Yep.
And I guess the first question is, over the last year, how would you describe the change that this brewery's gone through? Because just sitting here with all the beers that we have today versus what we saw on the board a year ago is very different.
Strictly to beer. I mean, you know, we came out of the gate, and I was super proud how we came out. You know, you hope that you're not, you know, people can't, you know, see my hands, but you hope you're not so far away when you first come out that you have such a huge margin to make up. It was a smaller margin than we expected, so we were super proud and happy with that. So most of it's been kind of tweaking and just really feeling comfortable and kind of just trusting the equipment and what we're doing and enjoying ourselves. Owen and I have a great time, you know, in the back room. And Pat Way, who's one of our bartenders, helps us out in the back as well. And, you know, it's a matter of just being present and honest with yourself about the beer. You know, we don't try to pull anything over our own eyes as far as if we do or don't like something. You know, you're not going to get better unless you're honest. So, I think the system is, you know, we're just kind of dialed in our process, and we're super proud of that.
Are you making more variety than you expected at this point? Or is this where you want
it to
be?
No, a ton. When I brewed in Portland, you know, especially 4 years ago, you're talking about it was a one beer town, you know, it was IPA, and then
is a one beer town.
Yeah, and with the occasional lager. Oh, they're coming around with the occasional lager or saison or sour. But the minute we came across here, we realized that that people are a little more open to other things. 4 years ago, I thought this area was behind by a lot, and it was. But their palates have caught
up. This area, like Camas, you mean specifically?
Like Vancouver. This side of the river, North Bank.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I grew up here. I know what you're talking about.
It was a big area for ambers, and at no point do I want to make an amber, you know. But in those years since I've moved here, it's become a huge change here. I think it's from several things. I think it's people moving from other states. I think it's from people moving from Portland across the river. So the beer acumen has definitely jumped. But they're way more open to trying new beers, and it's so cool as a brewer. I don't have to make just one style of beer. I get to make all the beers I want to make. I want to make all different types of lagers. I want to make Bavarian-style Hefeweizen. I want to make Dunkelweizen, Goza. You know, just run the gamut, and this has been really open. This area is really open to trying new things and really kind of jumping on the bandwagon with it too. So it's pretty great.
Have you started to think of styles to brew for the community, or is it more of just you're still able? You know, they're so exploratory and willing to check something, learn something that you can do whatever you want. Or have you had a moment where you're like, maybe I should do this style? This group would really like it.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to brew anything I wouldn't want to brew just for other people. I mean, that probably doesn't sound good as far as on the businessman side of things.
Yeah.
But as far as a brewer...
Hey, no, nobody gets into brewing for business.
Well, you know, you're not here to get rich by any means. You're just here for the glory of, 40-year-old men. I'm in my 40s. Obviously.
Hey, dude, I'm not far behind I'm not knocking.
We like brewing lots of different styles of beer, so... We throw them out there, and there's been some misses, for sure. And then, but I'm pleasantly surprised by most of the reaction we get.
You talk about honesty, too, in brewing your beer. You said misses there, too. So, I mean, I don't know the best way to ask this. Like, how frequently does it happen that you have a miss where you're like, I shouldn't have put that on the keg? Or do you not even let that get that far?
No, it's not a miss as in putting out a poor product, because we just wouldn't do that.
Right.
But as far as just whatever style that we did, I'll tell you exactly off the top. One of the first beers we opened with, it was called Lulu. It was a tart peach beer, one that actually did well when I was across the river at Fatheads, that I came up with. And it was simple, fruity, little tart, and there was like 8 people that drank it here. And I thought it would have been like one of our big, simple beers. And kill it. And couldn't have been more wrong. But the Pilsner took off, and I'm like, the Dunkelweizen, the Vienna Lager. And I was like, I'm good, But really, the Lulu sat on a little longer than we wanted to, and then we finally just dumped it because it just wasn't moving, and it wasn't something that we were all that proud of to begin with. We kind of, one of those that my good friend Ben Edmonds, when he came in here, and I said, I got one of those beers on, and he just looked at me and goes, why? And I was like, that's a good point. I thought it'd be one of those kind of beers that would actually take off for us and be able to allow us to make some margins so I can then afford all my nice top contracts.
Get some people in, get people excited
and
about
I was wrong. So that beer will not be made again. So, but others that, like I said, have, Weizenbach and other wheat beers, people are totally open to trying.
So what's one then that surprised you with how well-received it was?
Oh,
like that you knew it was good and you were going to put on for a little bit, but then everyone was like, yes, I need this beer right now.
On our first opening tap list, I mentioned it, the Dunkelweizen. I was trying to grow up that yeast to make the Hef, and I just said, no, I don't want to come out with just a Hef. And it was March, still kind of, a little cold and a little wet. So something a little more had a little more depth to it, and it bombed. I mean, people killed it. And I was like, this is fantastic. This is something that I didn't expect at all. So yeah.
Speaking of the town and, you know, Grains of Wrath, if you haven't been out here, you get off the freeway, you roll into downtown, it's literally a right and a left. You can't miss it.
You can't miss it.
On it from the freeway.
Right.
What have you seen? I'm trying to find a way to explain this so you don't, I don't want you to sound like, feel like you need to be arrogant or anything, but what has Grains of Wrath done for Camas? I want to know.
You know what? I think it's brought people here. I mean, you know, the beer community is very, they'll travel, as we all know. And I think it's brought more people to downtown Camas than would have come out here anyways. You know, it has had a reputation over the last 70 years as being that stinky mill town.
And oh, yeah, man. I went to high school in Vancouver. We used to throw toilet paper at the basketball games
because
we'd, like, make fun of them.
Right. And then people in Troutdale and had to hate us because it blows across the river. But a lot of that, they put, you know, scrubbers on it, and it's not nearly – they don't put as much production out. And so this town has actually, like, done a complete 180 compared to what it was even 15 years ago. From what I understand, 15 years ago, this is still kind of a, you know, a mill biker – kind of like dive bar town, and it couldn't be anything further from that now. I mean, it's a you know, upper middle class area. So.
Are you noticing that change in the town, changing the beer that's being purchased here or enjoyed here?
Well, I think everyone has been beer fans from the beginning. So, you know, and I think the IPA is always going to be king. So people started coming in here to begin with, and then it was just a.
I mean,
it's a pretty beer savvy town, you know. It was more than I expected, because there wasn't a whole lot here before. So when I opened up, it was very encouraging.
All respects towards it, but would you say more advanced than say Vancouver? Not to take a shot at them, but I know what you mean when you talk about the palates being a little set back.
How about this? I don't think anyone, again, it's not a negative in the. At Vancouver, but I don't know any of the breweries there, with the exception of maybe Brothers Cascadia, that makes a wide range of beers.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of stays within their comfort zone. A lot of hazies, pastry stouts and stuff like that, and that's great. But I, you know, the range of beers we have here, I think, is kind of you can find one for anybody. And then, you know. As a point of pride between Washington or Washougal and Camas together, which is kind of a bit large community of its own, you know, between 5440 and now Logsdon being in town,
the Brett Kings up there.
I'll put that 1-2-3 against any on this side.
I like that Pepsi challenge.
I'll do that.
I kind of want to ask, switching kind of gears here for a little bit. We were talking a little bit about, you know, your impact here. I'm interested in your impact on the state of Washington. I think it's really easy. It's easy for, you know, us on this podcast and for me in my personal work and my job and my just beer drinking life to look at Oregon in a bubble. And, you know, we know who the good breweries are. We know who, you know, whether it's Tanya at 10 Barrel or it's, you know, Tyler out at Barley Brown's. We know the players.
Josh Freeman.
We know all the guys. And the Washington side, I'm curious, because you have so much, whether you realize it or not, you have so much Portland influence in your brewing.
Thank you.
Yeah. You have so much Portland influence in your brewing. I think that's why so many Portlanders are willing to drive out to Camas, willing to drink your beer, because it seems familiar in a sense.
I agree. I still consider myself a Portland brewer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I got out here and... from being an unwanted brewery, and then suddenly, you know, but the everyone, like, including customers, when they were like, "You're one of us," and I was like,
"Thanks,
F&A,
yeah, yeah, hell yeah."
So, you know, and I'm proud of that, and the relationships I have over there. Being not so, Portland's the epicenter of Oregon, you know, Seattle's the epicenter of Washington.
Truth.
So we couldn't be further from Seattle than anyone else.
I mean, Vancouver's the third biggest city in Washington, and you're not even in Vancouver?
No. right. But you know what? We've opened a lot of eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying myself, but the North Bank Brewers in the past 2 years, so 3 years ago, before we opened up. We had the as a whole Vancouver, you know, the North Bank,
Southwest
here.
Washington. Southwest, yeah, you Washington. Guys call it North Bank,
right? We had the second lowest medal count at Washington Beer Awards of any of the areas in Washington. In the past 2 years, we're number two, and this year was a close two.
And I imagine Seattle's number one.
Seattle's number one, but so much just sheer amount of breweries. You want to go bang for your buck, we're it.
You're it.
I mean, really, as far as I'm
from,
so proud
from white,
of
from
the
white
group
Sam,
that we have
from White
here.
Salmon to downtown Vancouver.
Yeah.
There's not a ton.
No. I mean, you know, Shane, Zane over at
Trapdoor,
killing it with the Hazies. The guys at Lewitt, Fortside, Brothers Cascadia. I couldn't be more proud of this group. We, you know, there's a lot of gold going home this past year.
Well, where does, and to dive into that a little bit more, the Seattle kids, do they know you exist?
We're
do those
friends.
Brewers
the
up
brewers.
There,
yeah,
are they
kind of
looking at you like,
I've known them since Fathead's days, okay, so, okay. You know, I just like Steve, I have Luke this, at Cloudburst, and you know,
I have this thought in my head, this like vision that it's like, who are those guys in Kansas?
Well, you know what? I'll say this:
should
it
we
was
be watching out for those guys?
Kamaz?
Yeah, right. well, last year we came out and we were open for 3 months and we won 6 medals in a very small brewery of the year. And
that's
and
so ridiculous.
And people were like,
which, by the way, was an award that didn't exist before they gave it to you.
No, right? It wasn't. They made it up.
Yeah.
They did. They never had anyone who never made beer before win a medal, much or more than one medal. And so it was kind of a great way of being like, hey, it's not all about King County, guys. You know, we're here. And it was a great coming out party. So this year I was quietly stressed, like, you know, we need to get one. You know, please give me one, just so we're not a one-hit wonder. And people are like, okay, go back to the South.
And what'd you snag, 4?
5.
That a boy.
4 golds and a bronze, so, including IPA. So I was pretty stoked about that.
That
a
boy.
So, yeah.
I'm curious. I'm always interested in this with metal stuff, you know. Have you seen uptick in business? To be honest,
huge.
Do the regulars care?
Yes.
Because, like, I work at a place, we have medals all over the wall. And then people just are like, oh, every brewery has medals.
You know what?
Do your client, do they see it? Are
they
you
do,
seeing
you know
more
what?
Traffic
I,
from
I,
it?
I'm seeing more traffic, and our locals are starting to really take a lot of ownership of this place. And, like, this is their spot. And, you know, it's becoming more of a we're winning medals, you know, people who are here all the time and people who are part of our mug club and all that. You know, they find pride in that. That's awesome. I love that. Love that.
They feel like they're making the beer with you,
yeah,
by spending
they're
their
helping,
dollar.
They're helping, yeah. And we are at least twice as busy, if not 3 times as busy as we were last year. We were still kind of trying to find our legs. We were new. You know, it was a rough summer of, you know, 100 degrees, so our patio was a tough place to hang out, which is why we opened it. But this year it's been a good year. We're here. We kind of, you know, the kitchen is making great food. Our staff is great.
I had a great bomb me burger and some fries.
And yeah, we're super proud of what we're doing here. So it's not just about the beer.
So also with the growth, you guys have been, maybe this is just what I'm seeing based on where I live, but I'm seeing your cans way more frequently. I'm seeing more of your beers canned and presented more to those of us who live in the Portland Beaverton area. How has that gone? How has that been different than what you expected? How much growth has that brought to you, at least in your estimation?
It's been good. I was actually against it. So my partner, Brendan Greenan, you know, kind of tried to – he sold me on the value of getting some cans out there so we can spread things out a little more than just bulk. So we can have a couple cases go here, a couple cases go there, instead of just one you know, full keg going to one place where
right.
We get to 8 other spots. So it's been good. We've got to see our beer being traded across the country. You know, I'm seeing people checking into the beer in North Carolina, and
you're like,
and
"That's
in New
not.
York.
How did you get that?"
I was like, "What the? Like, what is going on?" But it's awesome because that's I want to, you know, whether you have to learn whether you love or hate that culture, it's part of the culture.
The trading culture?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
actually, hint, working on a secret project about that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'll tell you sometime off the air.
Yeah, yeah. love to hear it. It's cool where I'm actually, you know, I'll jump on and I'll be on social media, sorry, and they'll say, I'll see someone post on there, hey, I need some of this GOW dystopia, you know, in search of, you know, and it's kind of cool. I mean, in its own
it's
way.
It's nice to be loved.
It's not even just, of course
nice,
it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to be appreciated, but it's neat when people are checking in across the country and being like, wow, you know, West Coast IPA, you know, isn't dead, you know, which is, you know, we joke about entering it at GABF as a historical style, but, you know, it's coming back.
When you guys won for Vienna Lager, I about lost my ass.
Me too.
I was sitting there, and I saw you and Owen get up, and I was, like, looking at the rest of our crew, and I was like, guys, look, and everybody was like, I'm mad we don't have medals. And I was like, stop, dude. These kids are killing it right now.
You know what? It's all love, dude. We all sat together.
Oh, man.
You know,
as that little kid said in that viral video, don't forget to show love.
I was like a kid in a candy store. I saw you go up there, and then I think there was like a dark beer of some sort, whether it was a stout or a porter. Might have been barrel-aged, too. Lewitt won a medal.
Yeah.
But they didn't have anybody there. So then nobody walked up, and I was like, guys, Lewitt just won a medal. And everybody's like, who the hell is that? And I was like, oh, that's my spot.
Come on,
those are my peeps. Yeah, those are my good. Downtown Vancouver,
you know,
peeps.
There's a lot of spots. Ryan over at Barrel Mountain has been killing it with some stouts.
Yeah.
So he won World Beer Cup.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot more stuff here than people are giving us credit for.
Is there anything business side related that could be canning or not that has been more difficult or maybe more hardball than you expected? Like, do some places come to you and you're like, hey, we'd like to sell you our cans, and they're like, well, we're gonna expect this price and this and that, and it's really,
really
difficult
to deal with that. I'm actually very lucky that way. As far as the beer goes, we're small enough, it sells, you know, people are it's in demand, and we're small enough where it's, you know, people are grabbing it at the minute it's the market. So I'm very thankful that, you know, we haven't gotten to that point yet. We have too much salesmanship involved. It's just kind of is what we got.
What about the future then, though? So you're going to keep growing, right?
That's where I was going
if
next.
If you're exponentially growing to triple the amount of people here in the last year, then
we want to we're talking, we just sort of talks about, you know, opening up a small production facility with limited growth. Not trying to get too big. I'd love to stay at like 15,000 barrels, and that'd be it. Just keep a small, tight-knit group of people with the same vision about beer. Everyone has a good life. Everyone gets paid well. Everyone has time for their families. It's not just people coming in and punching a clock. But people that have that same passion, like when I came to Fatheads, Christ, 8 years ago now, you know, and it was like there was five of us in production. Five, including being on the bottling line. Jumping back and forth. But we had this swagger. We're like, we're going to make the best damn beer in Ohio and in the Midwest. And the pride. And I don't want to lose that. I don't want people to be, you know, in and out and changing brewers all the time. If I can help it. I mean, you know, it's part of the business. But I'd like to keep it small and just keep the quality where at no point, if we ever see waning quality, then that's where we're at. That's where we stop.
I've got along those lines a kind of two-part question for you, not just for you guys, but what's the I don't want to say immediate, but the short-term future of North Bank Brewing, of from White Salmon to Vancouver. What's the future? What's the next step for you guys?
For us?
Not just for grains, but I mean, you're well tied into the community. You know, for whether you're downtown Vancouver or your brothers in Cascadia or Barrel in Battleground or
Walking Man
in Stevenson.
This is so cool watching right now that everyone's upping their game, like legit upping their game. Not just like
time to play with big boys kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, guys that everybody's get forgotten about. But, you know.
I was just there this past weekend.
Those boys aren't messing around. They got a brand new facility that's absolutely beautiful. And they're making great beer. And they get almost kind of forgotten about because they're right across the river from Freem, and they're further out from Portland or even this area. But those guys are making great stuff. Dwinell's doing some cool stuff out, like, you know, mixed fermentation and that kind of stuff out in Goldendale. This area is still wide open, and it's still very young. Very young.
I mean, sky's the limit kind of thing.
I mean, really, if you look, I mean, just brewers that had brewed at other places before where they're at now is probably the vast minority. So everyone's getting their first legs underneath them and going, and the beer's getting really good for guys that really had no experience before, which I think is super impressive.
My second part of that is I talked, I don't know when it was, but it was kind of near the beginning of this calendar year, about the trend of craft lagers becoming kind of the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And here we are. You said the Crispy Bros. I thought that was a great term earlier. You said that's it funny. Off air. I probably wasn't supposed to say that. But I enjoyed that. I got a good kick out of it.
It's a whole new group.
Yeah, it's a whole new group.
Yeah, the Pastry Boys. And
the Pastry Boys and the Crispy Boys, yeah. And so we saw that.
It's got to stop at some point. Yeah, just be a beer lover.
And so we saw the craft lager take off, and it's still doing well. It's still doing really strong. Thank God. And everybody's excited about it. And I think brewers are really excited because brewers like making lagers.
Yes.
And so they're harder to make.
They're harder to make.
There's actually a clientele for it now. I'm curious, Mike, if you can look into your crystal ball, what's next?
Horizontal lagering tanks?
I'm talking about in terms,
I know
yeah,
what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, like, where do you think we can go? Like, is the next craze just quality? Is there a new style?
Is there a bounce back to West Coast IPAs where they're going to go,
bar owners or craft beer, bar owners are talking about that already, saying there's already a shift moving back.
I'm noticing it too.
Which is awesome. I mean, you know, we make a hazy, which I think is a quality beer. We make it for the people that want to come in here, but really, it's of our hoppy beers, it's maybe our fourth or fifth bestseller. So I think it's great because I like to make West Coast style beers.
So you're even starting to see the West Coast trend pick back up in your sales.
Oh, it's never been anything different.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Never been anything different. I mean, we'll sell hazies, but it's not like when you go someplace and all you see is juice.
Right.
You know, here it's, there's one over there, there's one over there, there's one over there. That's great. But no, we're the West Coast is alive and well in Camas.
You happy you left the Midwest to come to the West Coast?
Yeah.
We're happy to have you. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, I am. I'm never going to go anywhere.
Yeah, baby. You're with us now.
I love it. Oh, no, I'm here.
Hey, that's a New Yorker sitting across the table from me, right? Or New Jersey kid.
New Jerseyan who says the same stuff.
A New Jersey.
I'm leaving.
West Coast, best coast, yeah.
I can go and visit and eat food. I miss food. Being from Chicago.
Pizza and bagels. I miss pizza and bagels.
Anyone that's not from here always says, anybody that's non-West Coast is like, I love it out here. The food sucks.
It doesn't suck.
It's because you guys want your pizza and your fatties and your grease. We like our kale and our snap peas, okay?
No, there's no diversity here. There's no real diversity.
No, we just make the same stuff. And we're like Taco Bell. It's the same ingredients, just 35 different ways.
Do you want the best pub food in the country? You come to the West Coast, right?
Sure.
We can't get pub food like this where I grew up.
No. It's different.
But can I find an Italian place like I got growing up in New Jersey here? No.
Oh, there's no such thing as an Italian restaurant.
Can you get a beef sandwich, a Chicago beef sandwich anywhere?
No. Nope.
Actually, you can a couple places that, you know, I want, you know, plug those guys. But
you can plug whoever you want.
Oh, yeah, Samich. She kills it over in Portland, and Stanwich in Vancouver makes a legit beef sandwich.
Samich and Stamich.
Stanwich.
Stanwich.
Yeah. They do, though. It's great. It's a little taste of home. So,
Can I get bagels like I can at home? No, I can't.
No, you can't.
No.
You can't.
So it's just
different.
Can't
find any locks either.
No. No, you can't. Well, actually.
Can you?
I think you can. It's not the same quality, but you can find decent
locks. Different deal.
Yeah. Every time I eat, I'm drunk on craft beer, so I'll trade the beer for the food.
I miss a good gyro, too.
Yep. And I miss pizza. Yeah. I miss pizza, man.
But.
I know. We're like a pizza town, and Mike has pizza, and he's like, all this pizza sucks.
I'm very picky. I'm sorry.
But I get to wake up in the morning and see the mountains and the beautiful greenery.
Yep.
I wouldn't trade that. They ship now. I can order that online. I can get Lou Malnati's shipped out here. Mm. I can get Portillo's beef sandwiches shipped out here for under $100. I'm good to go.
You can't get Pequod's, though. I do like me some
Pequod's. No, but we're going back in September, taking her to Chicago for the Bears-Packers 100th year anniversary game. My buddy Brent here.
That's not a big deal at all.
That's the opening game of the season, right? That's
opening
the Thursday
game,
night.
Thursday night football. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're getting hooked up. And I already told her, the minute the game's over, I'm calling Pequod's and having it shipped to the hotel. We're just going right home and eating
Get
Pequod's.
Ready for that cheesy crust.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, well, that's all the questions I had. If you want to keep reminiscing about it.
I mean, we could sit here for hours and hours and hours.
Sorry.
But, yeah, so thank you, Mike, so much for having us out.
Hey, congratulations, guys. You guys have been doing a wonderful job. And
thanks, man.
Thank you.
It's so fun to see you guys bring in some more. And to, you know, your radio station for showing a little love for craft beer. And you know, we appreciate that as well.
I think the big thing that we stood by, you know, what the foundation of this podcast is that we're here to teach.
Yeah.
We're here to have fun. We're here to enjoy, experience, and talk about it. I think it's
maybe
too
occasionally
easy.
We rant a little bit, but
yeah,
you know,
but I think it's too easy
right.
to be. I think it's too easy to sit in this town and be like, "All right, I've got 13 beers in front of me from Grains of Wrath, and yeah, that dive bar lager's all right, and you know this stout's good, and the rest of it's kind of whatever." Yeah. You know, it's just like it's cool to bash, you know, and we never wanted to be that.
I'm over it. It's the Yelp, Yelp mentality.
Yeah,
and untapped mentality.
Yeah,
I hate people like that.
Yeah, and all we want, we just
I understand it drives the industry, but when I
does it when, or does it hurt the industry?
Yeah, it hurts my soul. Yeah, when someone I see someone on there. I don't even like IPAs. One star. Well, what's the point of even?
Yeah, right.
It
jump
then?
Off a cliff, just man. Do that doesn't make
get
any
your,
sense.
Get your little badge. Just check into it. Just don't rate it.
Yeah.
And also, why did you choose the IPA if you don't like IPAs?
Well, you know, because you have to get your unique
beers. Single beer, right?
You get, you know, 16 million
unique
beers.
I'm allergic to peanuts, and this peanut butter milk stout put me in anaphylactic shock. One star.
That's true.
Okay. Right. Mike Hutzker, stick around for Beer of the Week.
Right.
We have to pick what it is. We still haven't chosen.
Oh, good God.
But it's going to be tough because, like we said in the first segment.
So you guys should wrestle.
Well, then we know who's going to win that fight, right?
Right, dude. I went to the gym this morning.
Patrick's a feisty little guy.
I went
guy,
to the
man.
Gym this morning, baby. Not really. I woke up in a drunken hangover.
All right, let's do Beer of the Week next here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris and Mike Hutzker. Beer of the Week time here on Beers and Us with Mike Lynch and Patrick Harris. We have put our heads together. Two very large heads and one very small head.
Whoa, easy. I wear a 7.5 baseball hat, so.
7.58, I guess.
Right. I'm almost an 8, so.
Damn. Here I am. I'm like the kid. I'm that.
That's why I said one small and two large heads.
Well, I like.
Pumpkin, dude.
I have a good sized head for the size of person I am.
You and Barry Bond should hang out.
It's like my. It's. For me,
I actually met him in Balco once. Yeah.
Did you? It's like the size of my feet, you know. I'm 5'6", 5'7", and I wear a size 12. You're like, oh, man, hey, those feet are pretty big for a short guy. I'm like, hey, my head's pretty big for a short guy, too. And then I, with you yahoos,
yeah.
You're like, small head over there.
Dude, I'm a huge fan of you hobbits. It's amazing. Yeah.
So we put
old window licking mouth breather over there.
So we put our proportionally Maybe. Large heads and one disproportionately large head together.
Oh, gee shucks.
Wow.
And picked our beer of the week, and we picked the Frosthammer Helles Lager.
Shocker!
Which is like our fifth Helles Lager in the last 10 episodes. It's been beer of the week, but it's okay because it's our favorite style right now.
Hey, we're chasing Krispies, bro.
Jesus Christ.
Never gonna let that go.
Oh, man.
So, tasting notes, what do you got? We've already had this one, so I can't feel like, let's take a sip. We've already been drinking it.
Pull the curtain back. We've been sitting here laughing and telling stories for a while, so I'm trying to keep my head together right now. I need to actually taste this beer.
You're disproportionately large head together.
I need to actually taste this beer and construe some thoughts, so speak some words while I think.
Okay.
This is a terrible IPA.
One star. Mike, why don't you tell us your – this is the first time you ever brewed a Helles Lager. Why don't you tell us your thoughts about –
You were very proud about this when we walked in today.
Well, about doing a Helles.
For a first run, I'm super stoked where it's at. You know, stylistically, it's a super – you know, it's one of the most crushable German-style lagers. It's not too hop forward, so it doesn't get – you know, it doesn't put – you know, it's an off-putting to people. It's lightly bittered. It's about, you know, hop – you know, hop malt balance and a little bit malt forward. So it's all low alpha, middle fruit, and you know, it's one of those easy easy drinking, good beers. I'll give credit. I reached out to Kevin Davey and a few other guys just to kind of give a basic idea of what I should be going for, and they helped me out.
What do you think? Do you think there has been a shift in the Helles Lager in terms? Are we almost creating an American style Helles Lager or a West Coast style Helles Lager? Because I have some, like an On Dex, for example, yep. is very Vienna forward.
Well, you
to
know
where
what?
I'm not getting, Here's I don't get a ton of them in Americans, like local guys that are doing hellers.
Understand that there's a lot of regionality even in Germany. So when you say Vienna or you say Oktoberfest, especially Oktoberfest, Oktoberfest can be essentially a Dortmunder, just an Imperial Helles.
Right.
So a light, just a little bit heavier on alcohol.
An export, yeah.
Or one that goes as far as being a Märzen. So, you know, it depends where you are in Germany. So I think we've all become accustomed to kind of like, you know, the Andex version of where it's this light, crisp, you know, kind of like Volbeer, you know, every man's beer kind of deal. So without too much variation in it.
But I will ask, though, do you think we're kind of, you said you reached out to some people about, you know, make sure you're going down the right path. Do you think we're creating kind of our own style of Helles, or do you think we're trying to mimic certain regions?
I think mimicking our favorite regions.
Okay.
And some people, I would say probably, you know, wouldn't know the difference between a Munich Helles and others. I think Munich style Helles is what I make here and what most of us do. So it's just got this beautiful balance. I think it's my favorite version of Helles.
We had one the other podcast. I can't remember exactly which one it was.
We did the Occidental last week.
Yes. That one was way maltier than a lot of the Helleses that we've been having over the course of the last couple of months on the podcast.
That's a good one.
So it was one of my favorite ones that I've had, yeah. So where do you fall in terms of the balance in this style of beer? Because that was more malt forward. Generally, I mean, you mentioned it, that this is kind of down the middle balance, but is that what you want?
I'm more down the middle.
Yeah.
You know, still malt derived as far as the base of the beer, and then just enough hop, and it's even bittered with like a super low alpha hop. So it's not like you're balancing like a big alpha hop like you would do in an IPA or even some other German style beers, and then go lower from there. It's kind of this low alpha hop all the way through. So it just kind of just balances enough, and then just a little kiss at the end for a little aromatics and just a little bit of floral.
I think this beer is fantastic, Mike.
Thanks.
For your first go at a Helles, I think that's great. Do you?
Are there any tweaks you were thinking about after your first go with this that you were noodling around with?
Yeah. I maybe it's had the finishing gravity be about 2/10 higher. I know it's 2/10, but it's an important 2/10.
Yeah. 2/7 is 2/7. 2/8 is 2/8.
Yeah. You know, like, it's a big difference.
It's a big difference.
This one finished at, I think it was 2.6, so I'd like to see this closer to 2.8.
In kind of getting back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, you know, but I want to stick with this beer as it is beer of the week. Do you see, when you throw the Helles up there, what does that do in terms of sales for you guys next to the Dive Bar Lager or the Luger Pilsner? Like, what is the best way your bartenders, your staff, your crew has found to differentiate between these?
You know, I Pilsner's an easy,
it says Pilsner,
one to explain.
People
Pilsner,
know.
People understand. It's, yep, it's a little more floral.
A little more doughy.
Yeah, a little more floral, a little more hop character to it. Dive Bar Lager is, you know, everything that you expect from
a dive bar.
A dive bar, except for with good ingredients. I mean, literally.
What do you mean? Those mozzarella sticks
super
were phenomenal.
It's super low. You know, it's 4%. It's made with probably about 25% rice. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps the body light, easy. There's not a lot. That's the one where if we have someone coming in and says, hey, I drink Coors Light. Or even the Mexican lager that way with a little bit of the corn, you know, kind of gives it a very familiar. And then Helles is you know, a style that I want people to get used to here because I plan on making it more often. Because I think it's one of those Pilsner and Helles, even though Dive Bar has had like this huge swell of like, I get a bunch of on social media, like, you need to make this all the time. I'm like,
the Dive Bar
I'll
Lager.
Consider it. Yeah. 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 It's a cool, easy drinker. You know,
the name kills it too. Let's not deny that.
I'll say this right here. My partners and most, no one liked it, but me.
The name?
Yeah. Dive Bar Lager, and I go, oh, well, I don't really like the name. I'm like, well, that's the name, because I think it's cool.
It's my beer, and I like it, yeah, and I got final say.
Yeah, people were just like, literally nobody except for me liked that name. And then once it got out, everyone's like, oh, I love that name. No one's got that. I'm like, nope. And then like, oh.
Better get that. Better get on that TTB real quick.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, I guess I mean it's so fun, you know, and that's kind of as we've talked over the last probably 6 months about loggers becoming the thing. It warms my heart to know that the Helles style is a style you want to continue making because it's my favorite lager style. I mean, I love Vienna lager because I love that malt so much.
Sure.
You know, so I'll do Vienna lager, Märzen, Festbier, whichever kind of route you want to go with that because I love that malt so much. But as far as light, easy drinking beer, this is the style for me. And even Lynch is jumping on board with it, too.
I mean, as someone who grew up.
Yingling for life, bro.
Well, Yingling was the first beer I really had. But as someone who started drinking craft beer as dark beer only, this is probably my favorite style of the lighter beers outside of an IPA that I've had since I've expanded my horizons. For some reason, it really sits with me.
No, I agree. As far as the lighter styles, Helles and, you know, Pilsner is always number one for me because I always like a little more hop character to it. That's just my own personal, I'm a hop kid. But even the German noble hops, you know, it's not like American hops, but it's, you know, there's something about it being a little more hop forward, a little more bitterness. The balance of Helles is just so drinkable. Vienna Lager, I love that beer just because, it is one of my favorite styles next to Schwarz beer. And so it's got a little more malt character. It's like a delicate balance of malt without being malty, like overly malty. Because there's that balance that you need to toe with that style. But Schwarz beers, actually we're entering that into GABF as well. That's in the can right now with the Vienna, because I think that's got a shot because it's one of my favorite styles. And at least get some good feedback on it. So.
Anything you want to promote while we're here, or do you have another question?
I just want to make sure that people don't skip over the fact that Mike was like, as I started as a dark beer drinker and as I started learning light beers like IPAs, no one has ever said that in their history of life. Light beers like IPAs.
Well, light in color, right?
Yeah, like
he's like, I really only drink stouts, so when I moved to light beers, like IPAs, like it was such a weird thing for me.
No, it did to me too. I was like, did that? Yeah.
And you kept talking, so I just let it go. But I was like, I need to make sure
you brought it up.
People know that he just called IPAs lighter beers.
I get what you're saying.
In color,
we get what you're saying. It's just none of us ever think that way.
Well, let me be
IPAs
the first to
tend
say
to
that
be heavier beers.
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky. I've got like 9 light beers up there for you.
There you go. Don't worry. I've tried almost all of them.
Don't worry.
So it's great.
He's still got hoppy beer.
That's six. That's what I meant. 6 hoppy beers.
Yeah. So this is usually the time in our podcast takeover, Mike, where we let you pump anything you want to pump.
Any new beers coming out or anything you're excited about?
This is your free publicity spot.
Oh man.
This keg I have is actually two months old. Drink it.
End of this month, we are canning and coming out on draft with our Crypt Keeper, which is part of our Graveyard series. It's all single hop.
Right. Yeah. I've had the last ones.
Yeah, you had the Grave Dancer, which was Mosaic. This is Crypt Keeper, which is all Citra.
Mm.
So it's super nice. We got a new beer coming out called Warhaka. It's not new. It's a returning beer. It's all New Zealand hops.
I like them Australia.
Zealand hops. They're like a little more delicate. They're not as big and oily. Don't get me wrong. I love Enigma and Galaxy and all, but the New Zealand hops just have this beautiful kind of orchard fruit kind of deal to it. Schwarz beer's coming. That's going to be canned in the next month. That's called Splatterhouse.
I'm really interested in how your Schwarz beer cans sell.
Me too.
Just in terms of how the market is.
People liked it so much last year.
I know. I'm interested.
So we'll see how it goes.
But you never know, right?
You never know.
This beer is popular on draft, but can could be nothing.
Yep.
Could be bigger than you thought. I don't know many people moving cans of Schwartz.
Me either.
So if you make it, more power to you, brother.
Oh, and by the way, you know what? Our kitchen's killing it too. So, you know, our burgers are awesome, fried chicken sandwiches and all that sort of thing. So
Mike and I were looking at that fried chicken, dude.
It's so good.
I was debating between that and the Bon Mi burger.
You made a good choice either way, but yeah. The patio's killing it, you know, this year.
It's not 100 degrees, yeah.
It's not 100 degrees.
For you guys that aren't from here, this is what the Pacific Northwest summers are like.
80 degrees and sunny. And
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. These 4 weeks straight of 100 degree weather is global warming.
You know what, though? I can.
Yeah, yeah, I said it. Global warming, where the planet is warming more than it should.
It is. Let's be honest.
Let's be real here.
Winters aren't as bad as they used to be.
Yeah.
So not
except for when they reach 0 degrees, but
that won't happen here.
It did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's fake news.
A couple of years ago. I love hearing that, though, compared to, like, you know, half the year in Chicago.
Yeah, you don't remember the blizzard of 98 like
there was
I
a blizzard of 98 in New Jersey. I remember that one.
Ours is a blizzard of 78.
I was not alive
yet. 7 years old. Yeah, neither were you. Yeah.
Well, Mike, I will say this, as I know Lynch is going to sign us off here. Thank you so much from me personally and for this podcast sake. Grains of Wrath and you have been a very, very big help for us. And
thank
we appreciate
you. Well, and thank you
we appreciate
coming
you
again.
Spending your time with us. It means a lot to us.
And vice versa. I mean, this is, you know, I'm honored you guys came out here to celebrate your 1 year. And congratulations. This is really awesome. I'm glad you guys are bringing this to people. And yeah, thanks.
I can't believe we've done this for a year.
I know. Like I was telling Mike off the air, I was like, wow, this
fired
is
you
flying
after the second week. After the first interview here, I would have let you go.
You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, episode one, we interviewed John Harris, and it's like, who's next? Mike Hunsaker? Yeah, you're fired.
Well, if you have not been
never
out
heard
here,
of him.
Like I said earlier in the podcast, if you haven't been out here, come out here. It's not that much further than your normal drive elsewhere.
25 minutes from downtown.
It's easy.
Really easy. The beer, as we were talking about, is absolutely incredible. The food is great. If you see Mike around in his I don't know, what, the pop collar hat, what do you call that kind of hat?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Last time you had one that was like Lager Life.
It's Lager.
It just says Lager.
But you
and
leave
this one
the
is
bill,
support blue collar.
But you yeah, leave the bill like pointed upwards.
This is not a white collar job.
That's true.
That
you
is
leave the,
true.
You leave the bill pointed upwards. So if you see Mike in the pointed yeah. upwards bill hat,
yes, yeah.
go
or
say
backwards.
Hi.
It's usually more backwards.
Or backwards.
Just
hat.
Look for
hi.
The dude that should be at a Mastodon concert.
You will know that very easily.
Thank you.
Find us again all over social media. We're on Beers on Us on Instagram now, which is new, and we're taking pictures and stuff. Me, at Mike Lynch 27 on Twitter. Patrick's at PDD085 on Instagram. And like, subscribe, rate, review, wherever you find us, and we appreciate it. We're not sure what's coming up next week, but year two will be year two.
Yeah, we say that every week. We don't know what's going on next week, and then we figure it out.
You figure it out.
You guys should get that big budget and start traveling around different cities.
I'm trying to see.
That would be the dream.
We got Squadouche at JBF last year. I know they're not going to let me go on the company dime this year. So I'm trying to convince somebody to pay for Mike and I.
They trying
go
to say
to
you
JBF.
Jinxed it?
Yeah.
Are they trying to say you jinxed it?
No, we just owned it. It's easier.
You owned the fake jinx.
It's like self-deprecation.
There are so many of you that I'd
it's
love
like
to
if
see
you
there.
If you self-deprecate, then it's a lot better than someone being. If you're like, hey, I suck, and they're like, yeah, you kind of do. That's better than someone
so
just being
be,
like, by the way, you suck.
It's just going to be Scott, Ben, and Jacob there now.
No. I guess so. And, oh, the beer's on us, guys. We'll be there, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're looking for a sponsor. Someone to sponsor to send us out to JBF.
Absolutely. That'd be so much fun.
Cool idea.
It's only going to cost you like $2,000.
Also,
whoever's out there, whoever wants to sponsor us, it's only going to cost you like $2,000.
I mean, we're going to be really drunk and it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
Trust us.
I mean, I'll pass out in the rental car. It's cool. I don't even need a hotel.
Right JBF. After we get there, not even after the event.
I'll just sleep. I know that place, that convention center, really well. I'll just find a place to sleep in there.
You can. Sleep underneath the table.
Underneath one of the tables. Yeah. Nobody cleans it. You've been there. It's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
We'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Deuces.
Thanks, guys.
Traces?
There you go.
Wow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.